Welcome, everybody. This is the Life Enthusiast Online Radio Network, radio and TV network, also broadcasting live on Blab. We're happy to have you along with us. I'm Scott Patton. He's Martin Patella. He's the life coach. We're having a grand old time. We're going to be talking today about how did we get here? Like, it's amazing, all of the issues, all the problems, and of course, what people spend most of their time doing is watching soap operas on TV, or I was going to say NFL football, but really, whatever is in season, let's watch that. Let's not look out the window. Let's not take a look at the skies. Let's not take a look at the water. And everywhere you look, people like Erin Brockovich, or whatever her name is posting like daily. I follow her on Twitter. She's daily posting about some place somewhere in the United States that has water that is unfit to drink. And there's either pictures of brown water coming out of taps or, you know, streams that are full of muck and everything else. And I want to take your attention to the Huffington Post. And there's a great article there by Lynn R. Goldman, who is the Dean of Milken Institute School of Public Health at the George Washington University. And she talks about the indelible connection between clean air and children's health. And she says, it's all too easy to forget that a healthy childhood is not just about avoiding germs and preventing accidents. Many air and water pollutants are invisible to the naked eye, so small that we often overlook their role in our children's health. This fall, the American Academy of Pediatrics issued a policy statement on climate change and children's health, noting that children are particularly vulnerable to weather disasters, heat stress, poor air quality, food insecurity, among other threats that come from a warming climate. The organization asserts that given what we know about the link between climate change and children's health, failure to take prompt, substantive action would act as an injustice to all children. And I think it's sad that they just wrap this around this thing called climate change, which used to be global warming. And why don't we just call it what it really is, which is man's inability to rein in his polluting activities to the point where it's causing huge health issues for children, seniors, and pretty much everyone in between. So there's the beginning editorial, Martin.
I do have a word for it. It's the environmental destruction. By the way, are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So I'm going to just try and be polite. But I am really pissed about how or where we are. I think the rise of the civilization illness, the illnesses that are modern, the new ones are coming upon us, having started somewhere around 1750s with the Industrial Revolution in England. That's how they got ahead of things. And, you know, the winning strategy, the economic victory of Great Britain and its colonies and all of that was triggered by their early economic success. Coal mining, steam engines, James Watt, early trains, and then steam-powered mills, and then coal-powered mills, and so on. By 1820, this thing was well underway. Military got hold of it, right? They started making cannons and rifles and whatever. 1815 and Napoleon, right? That was already modern wars. By 1820, this thing was going strong. Then the railways started being built. I mean, in Europe already then, in America in the late 1820s to 50s, Canada got its transcontinental railway by 1905, I think. The build-out, the steel mills, the Pennsylvania steel works, the Oklahoma oil rush, all of that all built. And then the chemical agriculture arrived on the scene. NPK fertilizer, that's nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. It's funny how phosphorus is a P and potassium is a K. Yeah, actually, the Latin name is kalium. That's why. But anyway, we are growing foods in ways very different from what they were when the revolution started. When they were opening up prairies in the 1800s, the farming, I think about a third of the population were farmers. Today,
well, it's amazing to me talking to my aunts and uncles, because in the 20s, 30s, 40s, they were growing up on farms, on the prairies in Saskatchewan, Canada. And my whole life, it's been, wow, lots of land and a little building there and a little building there and a little house here and a little farm there. And they said, no, when we grew up, it was nothing like that. There were tons of people around working on all the farms. And there was a lot of people around compared to what I perceive, right? Like when I think of it, yeah. Like there's nobody there now. Well, and of course,
sorry, it was a labor intensive farming. They had horses, not tractors. And maybe they had a threshing machine that may have been powered by coal. And then later, the threshing machine got powered by diesel engine. But it was a labor-intensive affair, meaning that maybe one farmer could feed three or four people. With the revolution in agriculture, we now have one farmer feeding 30 to 50 people. And maybe it's even more now than it. I don't know, what's the population on the farms, 1 or 2%? So
I'd say you'd have 1 or 2 farmers feeding a million people.
No.
When you look at the quantity of wheat that comes off the land, it's amazing.
It's not that big, but it's significant. So the revolution in productivity is phenomenal. So we now have food that's cheaper than it ever was in history. And we're getting about as much as what we're paying for, which is not much. What I'm trying to say is that nutritional value of the food is greatly diminished. And the toxic level, or the level of toxins in the food, is on the rise. So I would blame the food production methods. Industrial food growing is one of the major contributors, together with what you were talking about earlier, the clean air. Like the study says, children who live in good quality air have better educational outcomes compared to children who live in dirty air. That's the bottom line of it. So toxicity breeds health issues, breeds worse outcomes or lesser outcomes. You must be reading something. Yes.
No.
Did I hypnotize you already?
Yeah. No, I was thinking about it a little bit differently in terms of, I know how much wheat my farmers pull off the ground, right?
Yes.
And it's a lot of bread that I think you can make from that wheat. But that's only if you only ate wheat, right? I wasn't thinking, well, someone might want to have like a sausage or a steak or a glass of milk.
Okay, so let's talk about that. The modern agriculture, for some reason, the government, the Senate, the Congress, the whoever they are, have decided to go with the lobby of the farmers of the durable goods. The grains are easy to store. Soy, corn, and wheat, or all the other hard grains too, like barley and rye, are easy to put in a silo and save for a year or 10. In fact, I read someplace that they found some grain in the pyramids and they were able to sprout it. So it sprouted after several thousand years. anyway, what I'm saying is that you can store a lot of food equals energy in the form of grain. And that gets huge subsidies. This stuff is subsidized like, I don't know the numbers. We should try and look it up maybe for next time. Look up just how much the agriculture that we have currently is actually created by policy as opposed to by wisdom.
Right. So we've gone through this whole process where we've polluted the air. We've had coal burning, which means you've got mercury going up into the air. We've gone through adding chemicals. We've gone through the DDT. In the 40s, they were advertising DDT is safe. You could drink it. No problem.
Oh, yeah. I remember dusting myself with it. I remember putting it on my dog, rubbing it all over my dog and watching the fleas die and fall off of the dog. Like it was like after the dog shook, there were maybe 1,000 black fleas that fell off of the dog. My father, the veterinarian who gave me this, me, the 12 or 13-year-old kid who did this, we had no clue that inhaling this stuff that kills the fleas might have not exactly beneficial effect on us. Well, look at me today.
Yes, if you hadn't done that, you'd still look like you were 12. Actually, the thing is, we think that if we do something to some animal or insect or plant, it'll affect them, but it won't affect us. Right. And how we could think that would, well, I guess it's because we put the substance on, the plant dies, the thing dies, the animal dies, we handle it, we don't die. So we think, oh, it must be safe for us. But that is a really poor assumption when you look at what happens over 30 years later with people still getting tested and finding DDT in their system. They haven't even been anywhere near, it hasn't been sprayed for, you know, 30 years. It's still in our environment.
Yeah, the famous study that National Geographic commissioned, they went to the people living north of 60, Eskimo tribe or whatever they are, people who never encountered technology. And they took the umbilical cord blood from these newborn babies. And in each of them found all kinds of chemicals, 200 different compounds they were able to isolate and identify. And not one of these babies was free of anything.
So we now live in an environment where we're in this toxic soup. We've got the airwaves are full of cell phone and TV stuff going through radios. And then we've got the air that we breathe. Indoor pollution is, you know, what's the paint on your wall really? You know, is it lead free? Is it not lead free? Have you got asbestos? I mean, there's all these things going on. Then we've got the water issue. And then we've got the food issue and lack of quality nutrients in the food. So I guess we're coming to that point where we sort of say, what do we do?
Yeah. So we have this wealth, right? We have this ease of living. Like I don't really enjoy living in a dugout, eating the food that I have to catch or grow, right? Like I'm really pleased with the effects that it has had on my lifestyle. Like I don't have to freeze in the cold. I mean, it's winter outside of my window and I don't have to have firewood to keep warm. And I don't have to go into my dugout cellar where I have sauerkraut and year-old potatoes or whatever. Like, I'm doing great as far as that goes. But what we have failed to note are the details. And the details are that there's pollution and there's unexpected side effects. And I may be one of the canaries in the coal mine. We mentioned that. I have the genetic mutation that has lower ability to detoxify. It's called undermethylation or the MTHFR gene mutation. So that makes me susceptible to all kinds of chronic degenerative illness. And my kids have it even worse than I, because I think I had it from one parent, maybe both. My wife had it from one parent, maybe both. Well, my children have it from both parents for sure. And they both are carrying it, and they both are worse off than I was. Like, I only got sick after I got loaded with mercury. My daughter got sick just by living. No particular event, just a bit of stress and poof. I don't know, you know it from yourself too, right? Like,
yeah,
your parents,
wrong in the wrong place, and look out, things happen.
But your parents' generation was better off than my or your generation, and our children's generation appears to be worse off than us.
Yes. And so I think we're going in the wrong direction. We were going in the right direction, it seemed, right? Because, and I guess that's part of, there's short-term issues and long-term. And so in the 1800s, we had this short-term charge up the hill where all of a sudden, like, wow, but we had still the genetics and the food maybe not quite so bad, and we were able to kind of deal with it. I'm not saying, although they don't say people lived particularly longer than they had before. Mm. And then, but we had longer life. And now it's kind of like, oh yeah, well, you know, the bank account's empty. So there's no more paying the piper. You gotta suffer.
Yeah. Can't borrow it. You now have to pay it back. Yeah. So I don't like these gloomy doomy talks. I mean, so we have painted it really horrible. I think the day has come where we have to come to realize that we have to change our ways, that the industrial ways are over. Like the Monsanto ways, I don't know why they think they can continue to do what they've done. Those are over. I think the industry that, like, for instance, the Daiichi plant in Fukushima, built by American engineers, not Japanese engineers, you know, we're like, oh, the Japanese, they screwed up. No, it was American engineers that designed the plant.
Yeah, General Electric designed it.
Yeah. By the way, what kind of thinking does it take to put the backup power generators into the basement when you are living on the coast? The first splash is going to flood your generators and put them out of commission, and you're going to have a meltdown. Yes, we did.
But, you know, engineers don't think of these things. And I'm, you know, maybe you're an engineer and you do think of these things, but really, like, I spent half my life as a grocery manager, and we built a brand new store up in Prince Rupert, which is just a little bit south of the Alaska Panhandle. So it gets a lot of rain, and it's north. Like, okay, maybe we don't get frozen like they do in Terrace, but it does get cold. So they built a beautiful store designed for San Diego. So what do you think happened the first time the temperature went below freezing? All the pipes on the outside of the building froze and burst.
They actually had the pipes on the cold side of the building.
They had some pipes outside. And when it got cold, they froze. And it was like, how could you do, you know, I'm really happy. I was away for a week's vacation when it happened. And so I got back and it all fixed and cleared it up. I didn't have to pay any attention to it. I just hear the stories. But it was just like, come on, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea that you would actually go and look and get to know some place where you're going to build something is totally foreign. Oh, it works fine here. Like, no, you know, the fact that you're putting nuclear power plants on faults in one of the most active earthquake zones in the world is totally another story, right?
Right, but you need power there because that's where the people are. So at least there's some logic to it. And you need water to cool the towers or cool the reactors. So having some water nearby is also logical.
There's water nearby everywhere in Japan. here's the thing, that we've built three, or we're building the third of three massive super hydroelectric projects, dams, in northern British Columbia. there's nobody up there.
Right.
It's 2,000 miles north or 3,000 miles north. It's closer to the North Pole than it is to Vancouver and Seattle. And they're talking about selling the power to California.
Yes, they are.
So, you know,
they'll have to build a transmission line for that. Cut a big swath through the bush and everything else all the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So crazy decisions. So is it because we have disconnected the consequence from the action? Because so many people, it's, well, I had a hot dog today. Well, and I had a heart attack. Well, I had a hot dog 3 years ago and I had a heart attack yesterday. Yes. I don't connect the heart attack with the hot dog, you know, the accumulative effect of all those hot dogs. And until we do that, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to make a change.
I think you're really putting your finger right on it. The whole society, as we know it, is too myopic. It's focusing on symptoms instead of on causes. And this is in all industries and all areas. I mean, I certainly see it in the medical industry, where the mainstream medicine is all about treating symptoms and not about looking for what caused them. Yeah. But this is like, we have a war on drugs. We're chasing some small-time drug dealers instead of asking, what is it that people are so emotionally distraught that they want to disconnect from reality as it is and numb their minds such that they can't feel the pain from living the lives that they currently live?
So, and then here's the other question on that I often wonder, okay, is you have a drug addict. He does things like robs people, breaks into houses, destroys property, like all the things that a drug addict on a negative.
Desperate people do desperate things, yes.
Right. And then he goes to jail. And then he goes and he's with a therapist, and then he goes and he's got a parole officer, and he goes into a house to be clean, and you get all these things. And part of me just wonders, like, I'm just thinking about this now off the top of my head, like, what would happen if you just took that person, put him into a nice room that had a toilet in the corner or something, and just gave him the drugs and let him be zapped out forever, and you just sort of, you know, made sure he got some food once in a while. Like, would that cost as much as what we're spending now is my question. I mean, there's no answer to that. Who knows?
Well, there is an answer to that.
Is there?
Oh, absolutely. It's way cheaper, way, way, way cheaper to run that way than what we do.
Yeah, fight let him be a drug addict until he's tired of it and wants to get cleaned up.
Yes, it's just crazy.
You know, as opposed, you know, in an environment that's safe and there's someone there that can, you know, give them therapy or whatever, or help them get clean. But we know that they don't eat. We know that they don't drink. We know, you know, so we got to make sure that they have some food and they, you know, all that sort of good stuff. And then at least they're not running around killing people. And then when they finally figure out they've had enough, like, you know, I have a friend who was very, you know, from 11 years old, sniffed glue and did everything else until he was in his 20s. And it was finally when he just decided, you know what, I'm going to die if I continue along these lines. This is not the type of life I want. And it took him 2 decades to come to that conclusion, I think.
Yes.
And then he got cleaned up. And
yeah, isn't that interesting?
Well, I don't look at it as a mental and medical problem, maybe emergency, because the medical establishment is really good with emergencies.
Yes.
We have a whole different set of solutions, and people would be more productive because, I mean, instead of having a police officer running around trying to figure out who broke into your house and smashed your window, you'd have some person, either a nurse or a doctor or a therapist, helping that person be better.
Yeah, maybe in front of my house, near where the mailbox is, I should have a box that says, looking for drugs? No need to break in. Please help yourself.
And I was thinking too, going back to the grocery industry, like what would happen if, like when you buy a bottle of Coke, you know that you're paying for the manufacturer of the glass or bottle that it goes into and the little round top that goes on top and for the paint and coloring that goes around it. You know you're paying for the water that goes in it, the coloring that goes in it, the sugar that goes in it and the production of it. You know you're paying for the creation of some plant somewhere that built it and also for a bunch of trucks that drove around and dropped it off so that you could buy it. But what you're never paying for is the cost of the garbage. And I kind of wonder, you know, we know all these parts of the costs get factored into what I pay, and then it stops. It's kind of like the grocery store gives it to you, you give the grocery store some money, you go home, and now Coca-Cola and you have nothing to do with what happens afterwards. And I'm wondering if you said, you know what, this is what the cost of that going into the garbage, that going into the ocean, that going into the ditch on the side of the street. And you said, now what we're going to do is we're going to actually add that cost in. And so you move it to, because what happens is we have a garbage truck that goes around and we assume that looks after all of the garbage. Well, you just have to look on the street to see that's not the case, right? And it's like, this is the whole, you know, connecting thing. Garbage on the street means rats, means disease. Garbage on the street means that thing is breaking down somehow, getting into the environment, which means if you're sensitive to plastics or whatever, all of a sudden you're walking on plastics or breathing it in or whatever, right? So there's all these different ways that contributes to problems that we sort of ignore. So if you went and said, okay, you know, that 99-cent Coca-Cola bottle that you just bought, it's really $1.10 or $1.50.
Yeah, what are the fully loaded costs of dealing with this thing from beginning to end, right?
Right. And then I think the other thing is what's you talked about this, what is the sugar subsidy? What is we have this real problem with cities and provinces and states and governments, right? It's like, oh, and I don't mean to pick on Coca-Cola, but that's who we're talking about. Coca-Cola is going to build a plant. They can build a plant in Washington State or they can build it in Oregon State. So they're not stupid. They go to the governor and they say, hey, we're going to build a plant. Where should we build it? Oh, in my state. Why? Well, we'll give you a break on employee taxes and payroll taxes, and we'll give you a break on land taxes, and we'll give you a break on electric taxes, and we'll give you a break on this, and we'll give you a break on that, and we'll actually give you a grant. Here's $3 million towards it or whatever, right? So what does that mean? That means the whole decision is based on a really bad set of criteria, which is who can give me the best deal? So then the governor in Washington, the governor in Oregon, they don't think about what are the downsides. All they think about is, oh, we've got employment for 1,000 people or 100 people or 10 people or whatever it is. And we've got this building going on. So there are these spin-off jobs and all this economic stuff that goes on. And they don't think about, well, there's all this pollution. There's all this stuff on the road that shouldn't be on the road. There's, you know, tires are wearing out on the streets. We've got stuff going into the air.
Speaking of tires, imagine the tires are wearing, right? Like they are new and then they are not new and then they wear all the time. All of this,
where black does that go? Goo,
the black goo, it's in the cities. It's somewhere in there. Think about brake pads. They're even worse. They're metallic. Every time somebody breaks, these brake pads are wearing. Pounds and pounds and tons of this brake pad metallic dust that's been evaporated into the cities. When I'm in traffic, inhaling all of this stuff blowing in through my air vents.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, so I take zeolite every day as prevention all the time, but I've been only doing it for the last 15, 20 years. So that big damage happened long ago. I'm just trying to recover.
Right. Man. So let's talk a little bit about that. So we've talked about lots of problems. What are some of the things you mentioned zeolite? So tell us a little bit about zeolite and maybe some of the other things that people can do.
Right. So what can we do? Well, we need to try and clean up our act as much as possible. We need to start putting our money where our interests lies. So we need to start buying clean water and organic foods and drive the better cars and not buy the GMO foods and so on. Like those are the big things. the narrower things, like, okay, now that I have had my vaccination that loaded me with mercury, and the fillings that loaded me with mercury, and the cigarette smoke that loaded me with cadmium, and the who knows what else that gave me lead, all of that, well, the zeolite is a tool that allows me to absorb that and excrete it, get it out of my body without having to sit with a IV drip like with EDTA, which is the mainstream approach. So when I lower my total toxic load, I lower the load on the immune system so that the likelihood of having these chronic painful breakdowns is diminished. Like, you want to talk about your experience?
You mean where I just woke up one day and my liver had stopped working, and then my pancreas got inflamed, and the next thing you know, I'm chewing on ice for a month?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Who knows why?
Yeah. Sorry, man. I'm just having to answer somebody who's just insistent that I must answer their question here now.
Yeah, so they just said it looked like my liver was poisoned. Everything stopped, and that was sort of the end of the end of the story.
Sorry about bailing out on you like this. I am forever bombarded by my life here. My health coach stuff happens while we are trying to have other life, like record something important for 1,000 people. But there's the urgent one, the one that really needs help right now, just knocking at the door.
Okay, so what is it people can do if they want to detox? Because really that's what we're talking about, is trying to get our environment detoxed and trying to get our body detoxed.
I just got reminded of Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and his four quadrant thinking. One axis is urgency. The other axis is importance. Mm-hmm. And so you can have stuff that's important, and you can have stuff that's urgent. Yeah. And what we really are forced to work with is urgent, especially urgent important. But we oftentimes are forced to deal with urgent not important. And that's the waste of our energy and time. Where we should be spending stuff is important, not urgent, because that's the stuff that delivers the most benefit. And that's the detox, and that's the healthy foods, and that's the exercise, and that's the relaxation and meditation, getting your life in order,
right?
Telling your children you love them. I don't know what all is required here in this. Sorry, man. Yet another urgent.
Another example of urgent but not important.
Well, perhaps it was important to the person on the other side. They wanted to know an answer to something that's important to them. Or urgent.
Not urgent. Urgent to them, but I'm sure they'll be alive tomorrow if you answer tomorrow.
Thank you. It's a great reminder of priority management. And so that's the other part of their lives. What is the most important? And I think we should really think of it in this order, right? Like getting your spiritual orientation, your emotional health, your thinking processes is more important than the food. But right there's the food. That's clean water, clean air, clean food, healthy food, properly combined food, properly mineralized food, getting the right nutrition. Because you can hardly deal with or fix with vitamins and supplements stuff that you screw up with your daily food. or with what you drink.
If you're 90% poison, it doesn't matter how many pills you take, you're going to be poisoned.
That's how I think of it. That we need to focus on the important rather than the fancy.
And then I had a lot of people say things like, well, yeah, but you know, organic food is expensive and blah, blah, blah. And I read an article and it was very interesting because it was someone who said, basically, I'm going to eat organic food for a week, a month, some period of time with, you know, only organic food and see what happened. And what happens when you eat cardboard? Your body says, there's no nutrition here. And you eat more cardboard, right? Trying to fill that hole. So what happened with them after a couple of weeks is they noticed that they didn't eat as much because they were getting a lot of nutrients that they weren't getting from their French fries and Big Macs and all that sort of good stuff, right?
A hollow food, right? Calorie-rich nutrient.
Oh, man, like I just eat like crazy. Yeah, you eat like crazy because you're not eating anything that your body can use, and it just either gets stored as fat because it's toxic, doesn't know what to do with it, or it goes out the system. So when you start eating organic foods that actually have some nutrients in it, then it's pretty, you know, it's pretty amazing. Especially if you learn to, you know know the farmer that you're buying the food from, whether it's at a farmer's market or you actually go out to the farmer and you start talking to them about it, and you start realizing, you know, what they did to make that food that you're actually buying from them. It's pretty amazing stories.
Indeed.
So she just said, yeah. My food bill went way down because I was full. I didn't need to eat, you know, 14 pounds of food. I just needed to eat 7 pounds of food or whatever, you know, whatever the number was.
Yep.
And
serving size goes down. Serving size goes down. Life quality improves. Yeah.
Yeah. More energy.
But what's funny is that doing an experiment that short is astounding that it actually made so much change. I'm astounded that 30 days was enough to demonstrate something. Because normally when you start eating better, nothing happens. You don't notice anything. Maybe some pain goes away.
It was ready to go away anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the hard part, right? How do you make those connections? Yeah. And, speaking of connections, do you have something going on your forehead?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's you will see that from time to time now that we're on regular shows. Yesterday, I tried a new superfood, and in it, it has some ingredients that flare me. So for demonstration, this is seborrheic skin shit. Pardon my language. So what that is that whatever happens in my gut, my immune system's not happy about, and it flares up. And in my specific body, I don't get sore back. I get a flared up forehead. The price isn't too bad. My wife, on the other hand, she says, I'm feeling it in my fingers. I'm feeling arthritic pains. Wow. What about you? You get it in your knee, right?
Well, I've had issues with my knees for sure, but I also get some flare-ups around here and also on each side of my nose.
Right.
So I keep looking and I go, oh, good. I've been eating good this last 3 days because my skin is clear, right? Yeah. And I guess that's the fortunate thing for us, like, is we've created this understanding that, you know, that pimple or that sore hand or the back is because I ate something 2 or 3 days ago that I shouldn't.
That's right.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. So I can now make a choice to eat that because, oh man, I really love pepperoni, salami, pizza. Or I can say, I can substitute it with something else. I never say don't have something. I always say it's better to find something to substitute. Like I eat very little bread. And what I did was I had to find some way to substitute the bread. I couldn't just stop eating sandwiches. So, you know, I bought some gluten type bread and then I just thought, well, you know, I can't eat eggs without a slice of bread, toast. So I thought, well, how could I have the egg without toast? And I thought, well, if I melted cheese on it and put avocado on top of it and a little bit of salsa, That might work.
Yeah.
So instead of having two slices of bread with my at breakfast or lunch when I have my egg thing, I have a avocado and a little bit of organic salsa on it, and it just works fine, right? But I really had to sit down and think about it, because it was just like, oh man, you know, I love to have a toast and peanut butter on it, or I love to have a sandwich and dish. So we have all these habits, and we need to acknowledge them and say, you know what, instead of cold turkey, which is hard, what could I have instead? And that I find myself when I'm in the grocery store and I'm buying my food, it's kind of like, oh, Black Forest cake.
I want this. Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll go and I'll buy a little chocolate finger thing or something totally different, right? Not apple or orange, but just something totally different that's small. So I can say, yeah, I'm having that instead. And usually far, far better outcome.
Yeah. Boy. So yes, that was one thing that we were discussing, that the lost foods, like, should I try to have the lookalikes, you know, should I have an organic ice cream, or should I have the, and I remember Safeway, your favorite store, brought in a line called O. What a brand.
Yes.
O. And it was organic strawberries with organic sugar turned into organic strawberry jam, put on organic something cookies. So you had organic junk food.
Right.
Yeah. That's the deal, man.
So what we're trying to say too is the minimum amount of processing possible. Because when it goes through these processing plants and everything else, it may have been organic going in, but it's cardboard coming out.
Yes, sir. That was the point.
Yeah.
But what I was trying to say is we need to figure out how to live our lives without the replacement, you know, like the cake-like or the bread-like or the whatever. Just create a different meal. Just change your life. Give it up. It's sort of like when you lose a limb, just, you know, no leg, no hockey. Build a life that doesn't include that.
Right. Well, there's a whole tangent I could go off on that one, but with 3D printing, I'll stay away with it.
All right.
We've kind of come toward the end of our time today. I want to thank you all for joining us. It's been a blast. We're going to be doing these on a regular basis on Thursdays at about 3:00 Pacific Standard Time. And now that we've done a few, we're going to actually be letting people know in advance, so you'll be able to join us and ask questions. Or because of the reason we wanted to use the Blab format was the fact that there's two of us and there's four seats, if I can put it that way, or four screens, which means you could actually come on, join us, ask some questions, talk about us with us about anything you want to talk to us about. And we can have, you know, like the talk shows and everything else. And of course, we have total control. And if you go off on a rant too long, I can mute you and kick you off like they do on the sports talk and call-in shows or all the news call-in shows. I really like that. Like, yeah, George, you had a good chat. Yeah, that's thanks a lot. We'll see you next time. Click, they're gone, right? So that may happen.
Scott.
Yes.
Help me here. I have 14 hands showing.
Yeah.
Is it 14 people wanting to come on?
No, it's saying, it's like clapping or giving you a pat on the back. And if you see I've got zero, if you click on mine, I'll have a few and it'll go up and I'll feel better. Yeah.
Oh, you mean you have been propping me up?
Yeah, I've been propping you up, telling you you're doing good, right? So the way it works on Blab is if you like what somebody's saying, is you go over the double hands and you click and you give them props and like, yeah, I really like that.
Oh, my Lord.
If you don't, there's no minuses. Sorry, you can't. All you can do is, but you can also comment on the side. So you don't actually have to come on if you want. You can watch and you need a Twitter account. And then you can comment on the side and say, you know, what about this? What about that? And we have this real interaction occurring. And we'd really love to do that with you. So, Martin, here comes our famous close. If you want to know more or you've got some certain questions, what should people do?
There's a website. It's called Life Enthusiast, life-enthusiast.com. Read. There's a blog and podcasts. And if you have something urgent, there is a phone number.
Important and urgent.
866-543-3388. We answer the line from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific.
So you've been watching, listening, or blabbing with Scott and Martin on the Life Enthusiast online radio and TV blab network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.